You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Everything Is Black and White podcast. It's time for a match preview. Newcastle head down to Burnley on Sunday. I'm joined by Lancs Live's Alex James. Alex, how are you doing first off?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very well. Nice to see you again. And yeah, looking forward to what's a key game on Sunday at the bottom of the table.
It is for both teams. A win for Burnley would be a massive boost for you guys. A defeat for Newcastle, I think, would be unthinkable, especially if Fulham managed to beat Wolves, and at that point Newcastle would be in the relegation zone. I think people can already sense that I think it's a must win for Newcastle. Is it a must win for Burnley?
Probably, but looking at Burnley's running, they've still got what you would class as winnable fixtures. They've still got to play Fulham, they've still got to play Sheffield United. So it's probably more of a must not lose than a must win. I think if they can keep that 4-point gap to Newcastle, then that would mean that Fulham, even if Fulham won on Friday night, would only be on 29 points, I think. So they'd still have a 5-point cushion to Fulham going into the last seven games. I think Burnley would probably take that. But having said that, I think a win on Sunday pretty much does it for Burnley. I think it's difficult to see Fulham getting 11 or 12 points from their last seven games, and Burnley would be up to 36 with a win, and obviously put a bit of distance between them and Newcastle as well. So a win would be great. A defeat would make it really, really nervy, really edgy, because obviously Newcastle would be back to within a point then, and it does start to get a bit tight, and nerves can come into the equation. And Burnley are at Old Trafford the week after, so obviously a tough game there. So I think it's probably a must not lose from Burnley's point of view.
I mean, the last game Burnley had 3-2 against Southampton, very entertaining for the neutral. And I think many people thought Burnley were probably going to come out with all 3 points, and suddenly Southampton turned on the style. How big of a defeat was that for Burnley? I guess not just in terms of collecting 3 valuable points, but in terms of the mood around the camp.
Yeah, excuse me. It was the first time in 6 years, I think, that Burnley had let slip a 2-goal lead to lose a game. Normally, they're very, very good at closing out a match, even at 1-0 or 2-1, let alone at 2-0. I think that the game it was played as if it was the last 10 minutes for the entirety of the game. It was end-to-end. It was far too open for Burnley's liking. They struggled to cope with the Southampton forward line and Nathan Redmond and Danny Ings in particular, sort of finding pockets of space. So it was a damaging defeat, because at 2-0 after 25 minutes, you're thinking, we're home and hosed here, we're going to overtake Southampton, and we're going to have a nice cushion going into the last few games of the season. And as you say, it's one they need to brush off and mentally as much as anything, not let it affect them. I spoke to Sean Dyche after the game on Sunday and asked him that very question, and he, as you would expect, was very sort of blasé about that and said that it won't be an issue for them. Burnley have been in far worse situations than this one in the Premier League and come out fighting and come out on top. So I think they will be able to shrug it off. I think they'll have had it's beneficial at the minute that they're having a full week between fixtures, because their squad's not the biggest. They do still have a couple of injury concerns. They struggle to get their first 11. In fact, I'm not even sure they have got their first choice 11 on the pitch at the same time this season. So having that week off to sort of prepare, put the Southampton defeat to bed and look ahead to Newcastle will be hugely beneficial for them.
I guess the way that Danny Ings, you know, he returned from injury and he came into that game and he won Southampton. It really was fantastic. That might give Newcastle fans some hope. We don't know whether Callum Wilson will be back. This was a big week for him. We are recording this before Steve Bruce's press conference on Friday, so hopefully we'll get some information there about Wilson. But if Wilson is back, massive boost for Newcastle. But even then, you look at maybe Joe Linton seems to be finding a bit of form. We had Alan St. Maximum back against Spurs off the bench. He looked lively. And I'm just looking at what happened against Southampton. Is it a case that Burnley switched off against Southampton, or they couldn't handle the kind of the counter-attack or the speed of the likes of Ings and Redmond, and then you could put that into maybe St. Maximum and Joe Linton?
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of individual errors. The second one in particular, Ben Mee just gets his read all wrong on the far side, and Danny Ings is in and away and finished really well, actually still had quite a bit to do, but that was an individual error. The first one, nobody tracked a runner, and then he took a shot early. Nick Pope probably be a little bit disappointed that it beat him. So it wasn't so much that Southampton ran rings around Burnley. It was more a case that Burnley just had a couple of sort of naive moments defensively that, again, is a bit unlike them, generally speaking. I think Southampton did sort of exploit the space. What Burnley tend to do is back off, back off, back off, and let somebody have a shot from 20 yards and back themselves to either get a block in or the keeper will save it. And Southampton exploited that little bit of space, sort of 10 yards outside Burnley's penalty area, with quick one-touch, incisive, pacey play. And that's what the Claretts struggled with a little bit on that occasion. Having said that, Burnley could have scored 4 or 5 themselves. And it was just, it's just trying to find that balance between their sort of attacking play, which has improved sort of since Chris Wood and Matej Vidral were paired together in the last month or so, with what we all know and expect from Burnley, which is a defensive resilience.
And I guess those kind of mistakes that you mentioned there, given, like you said as well, they've had a week to prepare, it's Sean Dyche will be on the training ground making sure that it doesn't happen again this week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ben Mee's probably been Burnley's player of the season. Very, very rarely do you see him make an error like he did last weekend. Whoever comes in at left back, whether Eric Peters is fit enough to play or Charlie Taylor comes in, that Taylor is the first choice left back. Matt Lowton's been playing very well at right back. So they will have a first choice back four out in all likelihood with Nick Pope behind them. So I don't think there'll be too many concerns from Sean Dyche. The sort of credit in the bank, if you like, with their defensive work is vast, really. So I think that'll be pushed aside very, very quickly, and it'll be on to how they can sort of hurt Newcastle as much as been aware of the threats from you boys.
We mentioned the threats there. Newcastle saw a change of formation against Spurs. 5 at the back. We had Jacob Murphy and Matt Ritchie as wing backs. You know, if you're going to ask them, they'd probably say they are wingers first and foremost, but they've been asked to play in that position. And both did really well. Spurs really could not handle Jacob Murphy, and Matt Ritchie was just putting cross after cross into the box. Really big threat. And I mean, you've asked me to do some questions for Langs Live about Newcastle. I wrote in there that trying to second guess the formation, let alone the team, you know, it's a brave man who does that. But let's say they do start with 5 at the back, and I think many people would welcome that given how well they're performing against Spurs. How will Burnley cope with the likes of Murphy and Matt Ritchie if they indeed do start as wing-backs?
I think you mentioned there Matt Ritchie was putting cross after cross into the box. Burnley will take that all day long. That's bread and butter to a Ben Mee, James Tarkowski centre-back pairing. If, you know, the Clarets will quite happily let them stick balls into the box and bat themselves to deal with that. So don't think that would be the sort of obvious route to threaten Burnley. So Maximan, obviously, if he plays, he's a player who can unlock defences. I think we saw that in the reverse fixture. Him and Callum Wilson both had really good games that night, albeit Burnley were very, very poor that day. So, I mean, pace and trickery, you can perhaps get at Burnley down that route and sort of overloading the midfield. If they did go 5-3-2 and put 3 in against what will almost certainly be a midfield 2 from Burnley, they ask a lot of whoever it is, Ashley Westwood and Josh Brownell at the moment, they ask a lot of them in the middle of midfield. And if Newcastle can overload that area, and Southampton had a bit of joy with having like a Stuart Armstrong just in behind the lines, then that's potentially one route where Newcastle could get some joy. And obviously, if Wilson's fit, then he's a goal scorer. And he's a good player. So defences will always be wary of strikers who don't need too many chances to put the ball in the net.
Well, I mean, that would be the other option. you know, that they do change the formation to how it's been in previous weeks, where you've got the kind of that number 10 and then you've got the two wide men, you know, one tends to be a striker, and then, you know, the men across the middle and four at the back. Would that hurt Burnley more, do you think, if Newcastle played in that system?
Yeah, possibly. I think it comes down to having your best players on the pitch, doesn't it? And if Newcastle have Wilson and Saint-Maximin available, then they look a little bit of a different side, don't they? They look like they're more capable of causing problems. I think from Burnley's point of view, we all know that Burnley are going to play 4-4-2. They're going to try and get the ball from back to front as quickly as possible, whether that's by advancing in possession or long passes up to Chris Wood, who's now got Mate Vidra in a little bit of form alongside him as well, and a different sort of aspect to the sort of Chris Wood, Ashley Barnes pairing that we're used to seeing from Burnley. So they've got that that option going forward. From a defensive point of view, I think it is just a case of Saint-Maximin's pace and Wilson's sort of clinicalness in the box that would be my biggest concerns looking into it. If neither of those start, and you're looking at a Joel Linton or whoever it might be as your biggest attacking weapon, I think Burnley would probably say, well, we've got the capabilities to deal with that. They're very well drilled defensively, don't concede too many goals in games either, albeit they conceded three last weekend and three at Newcastle in the reverse fixture. But generally speaking, they're tight at the back. I can just see it being a draw. I can see two teams sort of with a mentality of, let's make sure we don't lose this game. Burnley are a bit of a draw specialist at the minute as well. So
it's an interesting take there. I mean, first off, I know our chief sports writer, Lee Redder, suggested in last week's podcast that maybe Andy Carroll could come back into the fold if he's fit, you know, to just maybe shake things up and give the Burnley defenders a bit of a physical battle. And it's interesting there that you mention Chris Wood, because I always just, I keep mentioning this in kind of every podcast I do, that I've got a player, and it tends now to be for nearly every side that I fear. And Chris Wood is one of those that I do fear when he plays Newcastle. Obviously scored in the reverse fixture, if my mind serves me correctly. And he seems to enjoy a bit of a battle against Newcastle. And Emil Kraft, bless him, played at centre-back against Spurs. And I thought he did all right until the second goal? And he failed to clear his lines and the ball ended up in the back of the net. And then, you know, his game went off it. And he's not endeared himself to Newcastle United fans. And you have to hope that Fernandes or Kieran Clarke start against Burnley, just so they have that, just so it's a natural centre-back against a big Burnley forward like Chris Wood. And you mentioned there the point. I can see where you're coming from, but I do think, especially Newcastle United fans are just not going to accept a point. I mean, they'll take it, but they're not going to accept a point against Burnley, because they are one of them sides that are down around them, especially if Fulham beat Wolves and put Newcastle in the relegation zone. Yes, a point would take them out of it, but, you know, it's not good enough. I think these are the kind of games that Newcastle need to be winning. The teams around them, they've struggled to do that. I think they've only beaten Burnley in the bottom half. I keep forgetting who's dropping in above, who's dropping in from the 10th position and downwards. But I think they might have only beaten Burnley in the second half. They've probably beaten someone else in the bottom half, actually. But yeah, they do struggle against sides around them. And, you know, I think they've got to go for a win this weekend.
I think that the fact that Fulham game is on Friday night can alter things as well, because we're in this situation where we've got 10 games at 10 different kickoff times. And ordinarily, you'd probably think these two games would be 3 o'clock Saturdays, Burnley's and Fulham's. But the fact that Newcastle will know exactly where they stand, and Burnley, of course, but perhaps more pressing for Newcastle at the minute, could have a little bit of a bearing on how they go about it, or how Steve Bruce chooses to go about it, given that, as you say, they could be in the relegation zone come kickoff. I don't think, regardless of the Fulham result, I don't think that'll change Burnley's way of playing. I don't think it'll change Burnley's setup. I don't think it'll change Burnley's 11. I think they will, as I said before, they will go with probably the side that played against Southampton, unless Eric Peters misses out through injury. And they'll back themselves to get probably 4 or 5, 6 points maybe over the next 8 games to stay up. The sooner they do it, the better, of course. And I do think if they lose and it just sort of drags on where they're not quite out of the woods, and they're always within a win of being dragged right into the thick of that bottom three, that it just puts a lot of pressure on games next month, such as Fulham and Sheffield United on the last day. And what Burnley won't want to do is go onto that game at Craven Cottage, which I think is maybe three or four games before the end of the season, knowing that a defeat will see Fulham overtake them, because that really heaps the pressure on Burnley for the last two or three games, particularly given that they're relatively safe at the minute. And you wouldn't see many people sort of saying Burnley are going to drop into that bottom three at the moment. So the sooner they get up to sort of 38, 39 points, which will probably do it, the better.
I'll correct myself, because Newcastle have beaten Southampton, Crystal Palace, Burnley, obviously, and West Brom. But of late, they have really struggled against sides around them, which I think is key when you're battling for safety. I know Crystal Palace, the last time I checked, had a great record against the sides around them, because they're the points you need to be picking up. In terms of pressure on Burnley, like you say, not many people tipping them to go down, but of course only take us a couple of results here or there to drag you in. I'm just wondering, given that the belief is probably maybe 4 points for safety, maybe even just three, how does that affect, do you think, the preparation and the mindset of the camp? I mean, are they playing it 100% because they know they're so close, or is it all guns blazing and then they'll kind of take their foot off the gas?
I don't think it matters one bit whether Burnley are on 33, 73 or 3 points. I think Sean Dyche will have his team, and he always says this in press conferences when you sort of say it's the business end of the season, or you mentioned it there, like a 6-pointer like this game is and like Southampton was last week. And he says, well, the points you get at the start of the season, why is that not the business end? Because you're still getting 3 points. You can still put yourself in a position where you don't need to rely on the business end of the season to pick up your points in safety battle. So I don't think it'll change how Burnley play. I think 9 times out of 10, Burnley will play on the front foot. They'll try and press. They'll try and get the ball into the forward areas as quickly as they can. And they'll try and use what is a really flourishing partnership at the minute between Wood, and you mentioned him earlier. I think he's got 3 and 3 now. And he's on course to get, I think he's got 7 Premier League goals this season. And he's one of a reasonably rare breed of striker. He's got 10 in each of the last 3 in the league, and he could well do that again for a 4th successive season, which, considering he's in a side that doesn't score a huge amount of goals, is testament to sort of his quality and his abilities, really. And him and Vidra have looked really sharp as a pairing. They've only just sort of come together in the last 3 or 4 games. So Burnley will look to open Newcastle up using Vidra either dropping in and spinning in behind Chris Wood. Obviously, Chris Wood's got an element of physical presence. He's not quite as strong as everybody thinks he is, but he's a nuisance and he's a menace. And he is capable of, he's brilliant from set pieces. And that's another area where Burnley will feel they can probably get at Newcastle is set pieces. Because with Wood, Ben Mee, James Tarkowski, they've got 3 really good aerial threats, and they've got Dwight McNeil and Ashley Westwood, who are both excellent set piece takers as well. So wouldn't surprise, I think we saw that in the last, trying to think now, was it 1-0 in the last game at Turf Moor between these two? And I seem to remember it was a set piece, or it was an aerial ball into the box that was the only goal of that game. And that was a really scrappy sort of turgid game as well. I think it was Chris Wood who scored it, actually. And you can just sort of see something similar to that, where there's very little between both sides, particularly given the situation both find themselves in.
Rarely a classic, is it? But you mentioned there the set piece, and parts of the season Newcastle have really struggled defending. Either just switching off or not pick up a man, especially when it comes to balls into the box and set pieces. And it is a worry, and especially when you consider Steve Bruce as this, legend of a centre back, you would think that the one thing they'd be clued up on is marking the corners and marking the free kicks. And there's been some worrying elements of play where the player's just been allowed to drift past the defenders, and then even more worrying is the reaction from the said defenders, where it's just kind of like there's nothing there. And I think in a relegation battle, that's something that you definitely need. On to Sean Dyche then. You know, lots of speculation about his future. He's been linked to Newcastle United. It would be interesting to run a poll and see how many Newcastle United fans would take Sean Dyche, not known for his free-flowing football. But I do think at times Newcastle fans are wrongly targeted with that. I don't think that's a demand. I think it's kind of what you said before about giving 100%. That's what Sean Dyche drills into his players. And I think Newcastle fans would accept any team that gives that. Does his future and, you know, what lies ahead come the end of the season, is that affecting what's happening on the pitch at all? Does that play into, you know, does that have any role in the weekend's game?
No, I don't think so. I think we've been down this road half a dozen times, probably more with Sean Dyche. He's been at Burnley 8.5 years now, and there's been countless jobs and positions, and Newcastle is the latest one, and Crystal Palace have been mentioned sort of repeatedly over the last 12 months as well. But going back previously, he was linked to West Ham, he was linked to Everton, and there's always talk that he will eventually move on. At some point he will do. He's not going to be Burnley manager for the rest of his life. But I don't think it'll have any impact on the players. And I don't think it'll have any impact on Sean himself either. He's under contract until next summer, until 2022. And I think Newcastle and Crystal Palace, who are the sort of two that have been linked most heavily at the minute, have both got managers, for starters. But B, there's a pretty hefty compensation fee to pay Burnley to get him out of a contract this summer if somebody decided to go down that route. And I'm just not sure whether Palace or Newcastle would want to do that, given that, well, particularly if both stayed up. I can see Palace giving Roy Hodgson another year, and I think it seems likely that Steve Bruce will stay if Newcastle stay up. I mean, you can probably tell me more on that, but personally I think Sean Dyche will be here come the start of next season. What will be interesting is obviously Burnley are under new owners. They've got I say this all the time, but they've got a critical transfer window coming up, having had sort of four critical transfer windows in a row. And it'll be interesting to see how the new ownership, ALK and Sean Dyche, how they mesh together and how their methods align or don't, and whether they're in agreement on everything that needs to be done and what players need to be signed and sort of what finances are available. So that'll be interesting over the next 3 or 4 months. And if those two sort of camps can get along and everything off the same hymn sheet, then you'd be looking for Burnley to push on and try and establish themselves as a mid-table club rather than one having to always have sort of one eye looking towards the bottom three. And they have finished in the top half in two of the last four seasons, so it's not beyond them at the moment. But with a little bit of investment and a couple more additions, you do feel like they've got the capabilities to be a side where you look at them and think, yeah, they'll finish somewhere between 8th and 14th, rather than think, yeah, they'll be in the bottom six.
Do Burnley fans, does the Burnley camp see this as a game in which they're favourites and probably should come away with at least a point?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I'm not sure how many games Burnley actually go into and think, you know, we're 100% favourites here, because it's so tough in the Premier League. And Burnley have been, I mean, Burnley have won at Liverpool and won at Arsenal this season and Everton in games where you would think no chance, particularly that Liverpool game on a 68-match unbeaten run at Anfield. And then they've gone to games such as West Brom and Fulham earlier in the season and not won when everyone was looking at them as home games, which they should expect to take 3 points from. So I come back to it again. I can just see it being a draw. I can just see everything pointing towards a 0-0 or a 1-1. Shake hands, and we'll stick with a 4-point gap, and we'll go from there.
Before I ask you for your score prediction, then, just quickly, are Burnley missing Jeff Hendrick?
Not really. I mean, they're missing him in the sense that he would be a useful body to have, because they've been really short, given injuries over the last 6 or 12 months, particularly in the wide areas. They've got Dwight McNeil, who plays pretty much every week on the left, and then they've been having to alternate between Johan Berggren-Munsson, who's first choice when he's fit, but he's often injured. Robbie Brady, who is now injured again and has been injured for much of the season. And they've asked Josh Brownhill to do what they used to ask Jeff Hendrick to do, which is sit in and slot in on the right-hand side of midfield, and that's not Josh Brynell's best position. It's not really his game either. So he would have been useful in that sense. I don't think there were too many tears shed when he left in the summer. I think he's one of those players who he's shown in flashes what he's capable of, and perhaps for much of his Burnley career, he probably didn't play in the middle of midfield or in the 10, which is where he'd like to, and where I think back to Euro 2016, it would have been where he was really good and effective for Ireland. So in fairness to Jeff, he didn't really play in that position too often for Burnley, but even now you look at Burnley's squad and he wouldn't be in there first choice 11. He wouldn't get in ahead of Ashley Westwood or Josh Brynell in the middle of midfield, and probably wouldn't get in ahead of Jack Cork either. So other than he's left Burnley short and they didn't really replace him, I don't think he's been missed in terms of the starting 11, and he seems to have slipped out of favour at Newcastle as well, having started the season in the side, but seems to be struggling for minutes at the moment.
Yeah, he's not a fan favourite, but Steve Bruce certainly seems to like him, and I think there's a chance he could be back in the side against Burnley. Now, that wouldn't go down well with Newcastle United fans, who they just don't see what he brings. And I was excited excited maybe is a bit of a stretch, but I was happy with the signing because I thought, look, a good, dependable Premier League player, and Newcastle have been lacking experience in that midfield. And it just hasn't worked. And he's been keeping the likes of Matty Longstaff, Sean Longstaff out. And yes, you put aside the fact they're Geordies, they've got to work for their place, but they've not been given an opportunity really. And Jeff Hendrick hasn't really shown why he should be ahead of them. But then I'm not the head coach. I don't pick the side, but it certainly will be interesting to see who starts in that midfield role on Sunday. Your score prediction then, how will it end?
Yeah, you can probably guess I'm going for a draw, having referenced it about 12 times. But I will go for 1-1. I just get the feeling that there's going to be elements of the game. It's not going to be decided by 3+ goals, is it? I think they're reasonably evenly matched sides. The Fulham result may have a bit of a bearing on whether one side opens up a little bit more, which could change the sort of outcome of the match. But I just think it'll be a tight, close encounter with, you know, not too many clear-cut chances, and I can just see it ending 1-1. I don't know what you think.
Well, you mentioned the Fulham game there, and that's why I'm not going to share a prediction, because I think if Fulham beat Wolves and Newcastle in the relegation zone, then it just turns it on its head. And I would actually, it's hard to say whether Newcastle would crumble with the nerves and pressure of being in the relegation zone, and then Burnley can just go and win the game, or whether it would give them the kick up the backside to go and win the game. It's difficult. My head would say that they'd probably crumble under the pressure of having to get back out of the relegation zone. But then again, you know, if it's 1-1 like you've predicted, then that's a point and it takes Newcastle out of the relegation zone. And, yeah, you know, you're sitting happier than you were, you know, before kickoff. So I'm not going to predict a score, because I think that Fulham game just holds so much weight for how Newcastle will play and how it will affect Newcastle, you know, coming into the game. But I'm hoping Newcastle can win. However, we shall wait and see. But Alex, a pleasure as always. Thank you for joining us on the Everything is Black and White podcast.
My pleasure. I just think the first goal will be key as well, won't it? Because Burnley don't often win from going behind. And if whoever scores first, it gives you something to hang on to, gives you something to play for, might lift you by that extra sort of 5 or 10%. So I could, if it's going to be decided, I think it'll be the odd goal and a 1-0, but I'll stick with a draw, even though you've chickened out and not gone for anything there and forced me down a score prediction.